Sleepy Salsa here on this Friday, September 14th of 2012, and welcome to the 62nd episode of the Last Bastille Podcast. This broadcast is kindly hosted over at radioforall.net. I should also take this opportunity to mention that the opening theme is Ashley Alicize's A Puzzling Predicament, and the outro will be Bosa's King's Quest, both of them available pursuant to Creative Commons Attribution, specifically CC BY NCSA 3.0 Unported. For more information on Creative Commons, visit them at creativecommons.org. For any other content that may not be of original authorship by yours truly, any such material is used under the sincere intention of fair use. If you wish to understand the nature of the situation we are all suffering under and what can be done about it, feel free to visit the Last Bastille blog, which is located over at The Last Bastille. Bastille is spelled B-A-S-T-I-L-L-E. TheLastBastille.wordpress.com. And before we get into the subject matter for this particular broadcast, a quick note about the actual podcast itself. I've been hearing some concerns from listeners and a few others that the file size for the last several 5-6 episodes or so, at least once I started doing them off, since they were started to be hosted over radioforall.net, the file size was too large. And I went back and checked, and like, yeah, they're like 20 and 30 megabytes, like crazy. Not the ones that used to be hosted over at YHTOM. Those were, you know, for about, you know, two and a half hours, the size was reasonable. But for some reason, just the most recent ones where I've been covering the essential concepts, they've been, like, really, really large. So it's just been something I've noticing with Audacity, which is a freeware sound recording application that I use for these podcasts. And I don't know what's going on. I'm going to try something different, and I'll keep you folks updated about it, but I will endeavor to get those file sizes smaller, because obviously I don't want somebody to have like only a few hours of a podcast, and it's, you know, like equivalent to like a really, really long documentary or something where it's like, you know, half a gig. I mean, that's just crazy for audio. You know, audio files should not take up that much room. So don't worry, it's been brought to my attention. I don't know if it's possible to fix the previous several episodes or not, but what I will be doing is starting with this episode and then the next, probably the next three or so, I'm going to be trying a couple different things to see if keeping the time about the same, anywhere, you know, 20 to 30 minutes, seeing if I can get the file size down to about 10 megs or so. So do keep that in your prayers and in your good wishes, or whatever, you know, religious perspective or non or secular perspective you're coming from. Just keep that in mind, that I will try and get that fixed. And I do apologize about that. I thought it was a little weird when I was actually uploading it, but I didn't think too much about it. But then the cumulative effect, kind of like when you're backpacking, you have to actually consider every single item you take, you know, whether it has multiple uses or not. And when I kind of like how I mentioned in the survivalism episode, where Stang was the guest, you know, every little item you put in your backpack is gonna be, you know, a lot of weight on your feet. So very similarly, the size of the audio files, if they're so absurdly large, but it's like they're inflated, you know, much like the Federal Reserve notes. But unlike the Federal Reserve, I didn't want that to happen. That was just something that kind of happened because I was doing it a different way, just exporting the files directly from Audacity as MP3 files. But for some reason, that just, where like each minute literally becomes a megabyte, and that's just crazy. And we're about 5 minutes in or so. So technically, if I exported this as a MP3 file from Audacity, that would be about 5 megs, which is crazy. That's way too much space. So I'll try and get that fixed, and I'll keep you folks updated should there be any noticeable improvements. But I'm going to start that this episode. Speaking of, let's get on with the actual content then. For this particular episode, we're going to cover another essential concept That is those fundamental bare bones basics of what must be understood if humanity is ever to reassert self-determination. In other words, we will be looking at another aspect of the control system itself. This episode, I'm going to read to you an article I wrote that was originally published on July 13th of 2012 over at the Last Bastille blog, which is entitled Controlled Opposition. Such a lovely topic, ain't it? During a war, two sides oppose each other, each seeking victory over the other. Conventional warfare dictates formally organized bodies of soldiers, cavalry, and artillery pitted against each other. Various forms of unconventional warfare, such as psychological warfare, contain techniques that are used to undermine the other side from inside their own ranks. It is not enough for the establishment to target, harass, and imprison large segments of whom they consider to be the enemy domestic population. They must also destroy us from within. Controlled opposition denotes those individuals, organizations, and ideologies that claim to be fundamentally opposed to the ruling powers, but in reality, they work for the very same slave master they pretend to oppose. Their facade is simultaneously their best protection and their greatest weakness. The supposed credibility they possess over the ignorant and the easily swayed is nothing more than illusory, for without it, they are utterly powerless. Once proven to be inimical, they must be publicly exposed for being enemy forces in disguise, and therefore treated as such. The secret police of the United States is the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI. As Lee Adams states, quote, "The FBI is not just a police agency. It is a security service. There are important differences between police agencies and security services. Every government has a security service. The mission of a security service is to suppress anti-government activity. This means that most governments see their own population as the most serious threat. It is a self-evident truth that the nastier the government, the nastier its security service." Referring to a security service as the thought police is not too far from the truth. The FBI, understandably, does not have a history of respect for civil rights in its capacity as a security service. The FBI's record of unconstitutional and illegal actions against American citizens is readily available to anyone who takes the trouble to investigate. End quote. The FBI, ATF, DEA, and the rest of the assorted alphabet soup boys have been known to use a combination of undercover operatives, agent provocateurs, and even civilian informants in order to bust activist groups. The idea here is to scare and confuse political dissidents from ever actually organizing in order to resist tyranny in any real effective way. Such behavior from these law enforcement officials is worthy of the Stasi or the Russian Commissars, not those who were supposed to be upholding the rule of law. Organizations such as the Southern Poverty Law Center, the SPLC, do not fit the working definition of controlled opposition, since they had never at any point claimed to be on the side of political dissidents. In fact, it is now common knowledge that the SPLC has close-knit meetings with the Department of Homeland Security, or DHS. The same gaggle of crooks who brought us those lovely training videos whose predictive programming elements suggest that Americans are the terrorists in question. These enemy organizations have openly stated they are targeting segments of the domestic population and have never pretended to stand against corruption. Therefore, they can't ever be considered as controlled opposition. Subversion is perhaps the most important technique that controlled opposition will use to further their mission in dismantling genuine dissension. The rank and file of the Tea Parties were quickly shifted away from libertarianism into the not-so-loving hands of the Republican Party, thanks to duplicitous figureheads such as Michelle Bachmann and Glenn Beck. Occupy Wall Street perverted the initial disgust with corporatist banksters towards an indescribably bizarre conglomeration of communists, Rastafarian socialists, and hippies. Perhaps the best proof of how both the Tea Partiers and the Occupiers became controlled opposition and attempted to suck people back into the left-right paradigm is how quickly and powerfully constitutional patriots, propertarian anarchists, and minarchist libertarians were completely shut out. Don't be mistaken. Useful idiots are not the same as controlled opposition. The former are mainly composed of those who could be described as guess what I know types. These are the folks who will moronically remain steadfast with their own preconceived misconceptions, all the while unwittingly assisting the enemy. Their main feature is their gross incompetence, so much so that they have been commonly mistaken for controlled opposition. Although it is not at all uncommon for such useful idiots to follow the actual controlled opposition as their own leaders. They would certainly not qualify as good quality personnel if they were properly vetted. Disproving a weak ideology is neither that hard nor that important in the aggregate. What is important is discerning which individuals and organizations are genuine and which are fraudulent. Too many well-intentioned dissidents argue over philosophical differences, but neglect, for some idiotic reason, to measure the actions of various individuals and organizations respective to the attempts they make to manifest the ends that they so desire. Insufficient or non-existent vetting allows those who seek to harm the grassroots an open door with which to exploit at their leisure. Back in 1995, the Patriot media claimed that the Murrah building bombing was a tragedy. I find it disconcerting how the militia rhetoric went from outright ballsy to towing the government line as soon as the building was attacked. It was almost as if the alternative media figureheads at that time were attempting to backpedal and find every excuse in the book to not act. Fast forward several years, and the internet talking heads are still spewing that OKC was a false flag operation, as if that assertion were holy gospel sent down from on high, conveniently neglecting those aspects of the event that don't fit into their bias, and therefore suggest a truly alternative explanation. It's almost as if the claim of something being a false flag operation has been subjected to the sin of misplaced emphasis by applying it to every damned political scenario. It is certainly not a stretch to assume that in the relatively near future, some controlled opposition will blame the actual Patriot guerrillas who would be engaging enemy forces in active operations on the streets as false flag patsies. If you don't believe me, just look at the rhetoric being spewed now from the Patriot rock stars about how anyone who even advocates for violence is automatically to be considered by the rank and file as agent provocateurs. I think this proves the willingness of such figureheads to sell out the real good guys to the establishment later on down the road. The worst feeling you get from the wreckage left in the wake of controlled opposition's path is that of betrayal. Here you have people who claimed they were against the establishment, who claimed they wanted to secure their liberties, who claimed that they were grassroots, and all that came of it was more internal balkanization, this time purposefully done with malicious intent. They are also the same ones who have infiltrated the alternative media and kicked out the actual grassroots activists who had been operating quite nicely until these serpents came around. These snakes need to be rooted out before they cause more harm to those innocents who simply desire to do something good by resisting tyranny. And again, that was the article on controlled opposition. And now for a postscript. You know, it's funny. As time goes on, you know, I've noticed a lot of people claiming that, the feds are everywhere, and under every rock there's some sort of, you know, spooky government agent type, and everyone's a fed, supposedly. Oh, that's interesting. And how do you go about proving that? I mean, how do you discern between controlled opposition and the guess-what-I-know types, the useful idiots? How do you do that? Well, I mean, there's a lot of different ways, and that would go beyond the scope of this particular postscript, but what I would say is that a starting criteria would be you would have to know who their handler was, or at least the handling agency, and you would also need to have proof of payment of some kind. Now, in the case of like a state's evidence informant, obviously the proof of payment would be not what you would typically think of. It would have to be like the plea agreement or something in the deposition, such as adjudication withheld or something of that nature, whereby they worked out a deal with the government to spy on people so that they can work off their supposed violation of mala prohibita or whatever. And so, you know, that's what we're dealing with. It's, you know, in a lot of ways, just numerically speaking, it's much more the probability of running into a useful idiot and dealing with them is much, much higher than running into actual controlled opposition. Because it's interesting, a lot of dissidents will assume that the controlled opposition is everywhere, hiding under every rock, and thus, you know, anybody that does anything, you know, slightly suspicious or who is suspiciously or potentially suspiciously violent or whatever, you know, oh, they're a Fed, they're COINTELPRO, and they all start, you know, wetting their pants like there's some, you know, like little kid who wets the bed or something. I mean, it's really embarrassing. That, and it's also intellectually lazy and just dishonest. There's not really another way to put it. I mean, if you accuse somebody of being controlled opposition, of basically being a government agent, an informant, provocateur, full-blown undercover operative, whatever, whichever version it takes, and you do it without proof, you know, what does that say about you? You know, and unfortunately, I mean, that's the other thing, too, and this is, and I've noticed fairly recently, this is the very start of what's a good turnaround, but it's still very much an uphill climb, is people have started to counter this, the genuine dissidents have anyway, mainly by stating that, you know, people who, that the other folks who are very quick, who very quickly accuse others of being a Fed, COINTELPRO, government agent, et cetera, controlled opposition, basically. Usually they're cowards. Because when they make that accusation, they're wrong. Because the guy in question, you know, may be someone who's genuine or whatever. Could also be, that's the other thing too, the useful idiots also fight with each other. And sometimes some useful idiots will be more, their rhetoric or whatever's coming out of their mouth will sound a little bit more ballsy to some degree, but they're still idiotic. And then the other useful idiot, you know, their foil, if you will say, oh, you just advocated for violence, you know, you're a Fed or whatever. And it's very disruptive, it's destructive, it creates an environment where nobody trusts each other, and then of course, since nobody trusts each other, nothing is going to happen, in a good way anyway. I mean, that's what this is designed to do. The carnival of distractions within the alternative media very much promotes this, and it's just starting to be dealt with. But really the best way to deal with it that so far has worked is by simply pointing out that people who are very quick, without reason, without proof of a handler or the handling agency, proof of payment, whatever, who are very quick to accuse others of being controlled opposition, are basically cowards. Because if they accuse others of being provocateurs or whatever, they testify that they are too scared to actually do anything that's actually constructive in any way, shape, or form. They prefer to live within the carnival of distractions and basically whine and bitch and groan about the 20 millionth awful thing the establishment did this week instead of trying to reinvigorate the virtue of courage in people to actually go and do the right thing. I mean, because that's what it's coming down to. In fact, like I mentioned in the article, I mean, considering also, and I mentioned this last episode too, with the false flag operations, by saying, and this is where we now have the interface of a couple different concepts, so just bear with me. Now, there's this claim that, and now they've been doing this over and over again, whether it's with, you know, a connection of good examples would be, of course, those mass shooters, or however you want to describe them as. The three, I would say, you know, Hassan, Loeffner, and Holmes. The third one being the Batman shooter. That they're all false flag patsies. But it's like insufficient proof. Or they'll say that, oh, well, Hassan did have, you know, contact with Anwar al-Awlaki. Well, you know what? Lots of people have contact with Anwar al-Awlaki, who's a Pentagon stooge anyway, but that's not even the point, though. I mean, it's very, they're grasping at straws. I mean, because that's the problem. And people who subscribe to this theology of false flag operations, everything is a false flag operation. You know, we call it, you know, they'll claim that in the Carnival of Distractions, they'll claim that, oh, it's, you know, such and such an event is a false flag operation. We called it out, you know, like the day after it happened, starting from day one, and we were right, and now more and more proof is coming out that proves we were right. And it's like, no, all you're doing is just confirming your pre-existing bias, numbnuts. There was, first of all, insufficient, actually barely any proof, not just insufficient proof, but just barely any anything proving anything any which way, that's that. It's just, oh my goodness sakes. I mean, and then supposedly if someone who is just on good terms with someone else who happens to be a little bit more vigorous in their rhetoric or whatever about securing our liberties or whatever it happens to be, then, oh, you're bad too. You're fed too because you're associating with someone who we've arbitrarily declared controlled opposition. And that's very interesting because that's guilt by association. Isn't that lovely? So when the establishment does it, the alternative media is very more than happy and thankfully accurate to call them out on their bullshit and say that, look, I mean, just because you've got, you know, whether it's the MIAC and DHS reports or something else or whatever, or actually there's also been those BJA documents, but you don't hear as much about that. Whatever set of documents from whatever, you know, despotic, you know, administrative agency or, you know, globalist-run think tank puts it out, that somehow, oh, you know, it's, you know, anyone who watches, you know, Zeitgeist, anyone who watches America Freedom to Fascism are also the same people that read the Turner Diaries, and they're all the same people. Guilt by association, basically. And that's very interesting because the Carnival of Distractions does it as well. They perform guilt by association all the time, and one of the better indications of this is when they use that term, so-and-so advocate, quote-unquote, advocates for violence. What the hell does that mean? I mean, that's so vague. It's so vague, the establishment could not have come up with a better way, could not have come up with a better phrase themselves. I mean, it's almost as if they came up with it. And the Carnival picked up on it, like how a duck imprints, or how like a monkey see, monkey do, the monkey learns from its elders, or from the older monkeys or what have you. It's astounding. I mean, you have a lot of these folks within the Carnival of Distractions who claim, oh, we're awake, you know, we're waking people up, and we're awoken, and we're awakened, oh, I feel all the fluttery butterflies around me because I have awoken, and you're all still sleeping, you're bad, but I'm cool because I'm awake or whatever. And it's like, wow, is there a litmus test for being awake? Really? Well, I don't know about you, but I'm not awake. I never claimed to be, and I'm here explicitly saying so. I'm not awake. I don't think I've ever claimed to be, but let's just, for the record, I know. But what I do is I make a good faith effort to see through the fog, and especially seeing through the fog of their illusion. And what we do need to do is help people see through the fog, not wake up. That's, that concept has been commercialized the hell out of. I mean, even friggin' Foamy the Squirrel had to kind of mention that too, and you can check the blog too, where I did a transcript of that awesome cartoon, that one particular awesome cartoon that was done by Jim Mathers. But it's just astounding to me how completely moronic and very much of a snake eating its own tail that the Carnival can really get into. I mean, they are the very first ones to backstab anybody whenever anything is badly mishandled or otherwise goes down badly. You know, it's happened before, and chances are, given how they're priming most dissidents now, it's going to happen again, unless there is a way to circumvent it. Really, the only way to circumvent it is by pointing out that they're cowards. You know, the Patriot rock stars are cowards. Otherwise, they wouldn't be rock stars. You know, not everybody who gets up on a microphone over the internet is a rock star, and that's a good thing. But there's a good portion of them who are, and usually they're very well known. And so that's kind of the problem. And the next thing you know, instead of teaching people, you know, how to perform certain skills, or even, you know, some of them claim to be history buffs, why not? And I mentioned that in an earlier podcast. It was the episode entitled "You Have Tread on Me." You know, and others, I mean, they should be, you know, for those who are history buffs, I would love for them to do, you know, broadcasting over, you know, AM frequencies or whatever, and doing something on the, you know, certain events, you know, War of 1812 or other such things. I mean, that would be really good to learn. That would really be helping people. Or, you know, you could also follow an example that I only know of one other individual doing, where you actually you set aside a portion of time and you literally go through different catalogs or websites or what have you of a gun seller, of people who sell firearms, and you literally look at the prices and you try and gauge that kind of stuff, and where you teach people about firearms, but like the technical details is what I'm getting at. Or, you know, planting crops or whatever. I mean, that would be really beneficial. And the good news is that that's slowly been happening. But unfortunately, the sensationalism that the Carnival of Distractions really puts forward is really enticing to people. I mean, they're the ones who get the most web traffic. They are the ones who get the most donations. They are the ones who are the most well-known outside the alternative media. They are the representatives of it, unfortunately. And so, they've seized control for all intents and purposes, and it's too bad, because there is a combination of bloggers and podcasters and even videographers, well, some of them anyway, who are doing some really fantastic, groundbreaking, cutting-edge work that absolutely no one else is doing that actually is very useful, but they're being, like I've said before, they're either being ignored out of existence, or when they get a little bit of more noticeable attention, they are they're discredited. Or at least in the eyes of those who don't try to see through the fog. But the same people who claim to be awake will be more than happy to whine and bitch about Nibiru, or the reptilians, or the UFOs, or the fucking whatever, you know, distraction it happens to be this hour. I mean, this is getting really infantile. And, I mean, I honestly don't know how the founders pulled it off. I mean, in some ways I do, but I mean, did they have to deal with social engineering? Did they have to, of their population? Did they have to deal with this panopticon system? Did they have to deal with nuclear weapons that could destroy the entire planet multiple times over? This is the stuff I kind of think about, to try and see if there's a way, you know, kind of wargaming it, seeing if there's a way to get around it, and I'm sure there is. I just, and, you know, I don't want to sound all negative, because there are a lot of good things moving forward, but I do want to impress upon you all that, you know, the Carnival of Distractions does work hand-in-hand with controlled opposition, in the sense that, in a lot of ways, they're their mouthpiece, usually de facto. And keep in mind, too, some of it is controlled opposition, but most of it is useful idiots. So, kind of like how the relationship between useful idiots and controlled opposition is very much, you know, one is following the other. Similarly, the Carnival is very much following the mainstream, I mean, for all intents and purposes, the mainstream press. I mean, it's pretty much a very similar relationship. And so, when you have the remnants of the alternative media just trying to push forward and get anything done, it's really becoming an even more, I guess, courageous Herculean effort than it was before. Because now, again, like I mentioned before, kind of adapting that Freemasonic notion of as above, so below, as it is without, so it is within. And so really, again, like I mentioned in the article, I mean, you got to vet your people. You got to start vetting people, because once you start doing that and do it well, and it takes practice, you can really start seeing where people's loyalties lay. And as a caveat, and this will have to be saved for another time about the ineffectiveness of debating, but you don't ever want to get sucked into the trap of actually debating with people with whomever you were trying to vet. I mean, vetting is not debating, and debating has no place in vetting. What you're really trying to do is you're trying to get them to talk and get them to clarify where they're coming from. You're trying to determine their vices and virtues, their, I guess you could say, their cosmopolitan attitudes, as well as their prejudices, their likes and dislikes, and so on and so forth. And that's, I mean, when you're trying to vet someone, that, you know, that's what you're trying to do. Same thing, too, when you're trying to evaluate alternative media outlets. You know, usually a lot of times they'll have a front man who's like the one single titular character, because it is a play, it is a theater. Their singular titular character, their protagonist equivalent, if you will, who will be put out front and center. They're given to you. And the goal is to see if they really are the genuine guys who just managed to sneak in and really do some good old-fashioned alternative media type stuff and get people prepared and otherwise help them live a better quality life and maybe move the case forward for liberty towards achieving victory. Maybe. Or if they're simply part of the carnival of distractions and are just trying to get you focused on something so that you fritter away the precious time you have left on this planet, because we are all mortal, we will all die someday. Myself included, obviously. It's not a comfortable thought, but it's a fact of life, so it is what it is. You know, it's a fritter away what valuable time you have left on this planet with all this garbage that doesn't even matter today, even less tomorrow. And again, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I have actually tried talking to people about either using, you know, PGP, Pretty Good Privacy, which is an email software encryption program, or actually the necessity for vetting people, come to think of that, or whatever, things that they can actually start doing now that will serve as a foundation or at least as a supportive mechanism for things later. Or that are just good enough themselves. I mean, that too, it's a combination of things, reasons why. And some of them will, who still have, like, some level of rationality left, some level of prudence and discretion, will take me up on and say, okay, I'll look into that, thank you. I appreciate you bringing that to my attention. I'm surprised the host of this, you know, live internet stream never brought this up. Most of them, from what I've noticed, and this is pretty typical from what I know is within the alternative media, will just whine and bitch about, you know, the Republicans, the Democrats, you know, left-right paradigm crap. Or they'll whine and bitch about, like, new agey type stuff. You know, the reptilians are coming to get me. All this total garbage that a lot of times is actually put up by the intelligence agencies. A lot of it is, anyway. Or, you know, sometimes some batshit, you know, recluse guy comes up with it. And, you know, I can empathize with people who, you know, feel lonely or whatever, you know, as many of us do. But that doesn't excuse that kind of disruptive and destructive behavior either. I mean, it's got to stop. I mean, the carnival of distractions has got to stop. And in terms of dealing with controlled opposition, you deal with them. Again, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. The prevention is vetting. The treatment would be ostracism. So if they've already infiltrated, whether it's your fault or not, doesn't matter at that point so much. But it's a yin-yang relationship. It's vetting and ostracism. That's how you deal with controlled opposition. You vet them. You try and see where they're coming from and all that. If you did it well, then you won't have to ostracize them later. It would just pretty much, you cut them loose and that's about it. Worst case scenario. Or if they're good, you keep them around or whatever. If some manage to slip between the cracks or whatever, or you screwed up during your vetting and overlooked something or whatever the case is, there are different ways of ostracizing them. I mean, the proprietarian anarchists, to their credit, have, and I haven't really seen any other dissidents doing this so much, so the anarchists did something right with this one, is that they've been constantly mentioning in their literature, their podcasts, and other types of things about ostracism. And they're correct, just objectively so. Ostracism has worked wonderfully. And so that's how you deal with controlled opposition. You have the yin-yang relationship of vetting and ostracism, and that's how you deal with it. But that's kind of the problem, isn't it? Most dissidents don't even vet. Most dissidents don't even ostracize when they should, and even less of them vet anybody. So, most commonly the ostracism is done, de facto, ex post facto. It's done by default after the fact. It's just like, you think common sense would be more common, especially against people who don't like the establishment, but apparently such is not the case. And so that's what it is. I've explained what the problem is. I've described the very beginning notions of how to deal with it. And if you need more detail, there's other pieces of literature available for more specific how-tos. But that's what it is. I mean, when was the last time you heard any of these patriot rock stars telling you that how to deal with controlled opposition, you need to vet and ostracize those that are intent on doing you harm? This is kind of like basic, but they're not telling people this. What they are telling people is to worry and fret about water fluoridation, which is a genuine problem, but the treatment is not that simple. So they're getting you focused on. They're getting you focused on a real problem that you can't easily fix. Or let me put it this way: it's very expensive to fix. And considering the different problem of lowering purchasing power, fractional reserve lending, and that sort of thing, this isn't just something you can just, snap your fingers and make it work. Whereas with vetting and ostracism, that's pretty much closer to a, snap of the fingers. It's pretty close. If you learn to do it well, you don't need a lot of money to do it. And so that's where we're at. It's just amazing how this is just not spoken about more, written about. I mean, why is it being neglected? It's up in par with like how committees of safety are not being discussed all that much. I mean, now granted, it's just starting to go, which is go up in awareness, if you will, which is a good thing. But I mean, some people claim I've been doing this for 16 years. Great, what have you accomplished? Why have you not talked about committees of safety? Why have you not talked about dealing with controlled opposition by vetting and ostracizing? What the hell is your problem? Oh, no, you'll yak about the president, you'll yak about Congress, you'll complain about water fluoridation, GMO foods, and a bunch of other things, but you won't tell people how to actually do something that will actually move the case forward that doesn't cost them a lot of money to go buy shit that they can't afford anyway, even if they are frugal. And that's just what it is. So I've told you how to fix it. It's actually worked before many times over. If you don't believe me, go check on the history. And that's it. If you're serious, you will vet and ostracize people, and that is the really best ways to deal with controlled opposition at this point. So that's all I got to say about that for the moment. For next episode, we will continue seeing through the fog of illusion by exploring another essential concept, that of fractional reserve lending. I'm Slip Salson. Thanks for listening.